How do you turn a $20 billion government plan for a moon base into a $100 billion private industry? The U.S. government just unveiled a financing framework to do exactly that, aiming for a 5-to-1 leverage from private capital. The race to build the industrial supply chain for the moon is officially on. Welcome to Troy Technical Intelligence, your weekly strategic briefing on technology and its impact on Western business. I'm Sizzy, and with me is our expert analyst, Troy. This week, we're tracking a fundamental shift. The space economy is moving beyond just launch and satellites. It's rapidly becoming an arena for advanced manufacturing, critical infrastructure services, and high-stakes resource development. We'll be covering the new commercial reality of in-orbit drug manufacturing, the growing business of cleaning up space debris, and the public-private gold rush to build the first lunar industries. Troy, it feels like the barrier to entry for space is collapsing.
It is, but not just for launch. The new focus is on creating sustainable economic activity in orbit and beyond. The technology is maturing, and now the business models and regulatory frameworks are catching up. This is creating immediate opportunities and threats for industries that, until now, have been firmly terrestrial.
Let's start there, with something that sounds like science fiction: manufacturing pharmaceuticals in orbit. We saw major news from Varda Space Industries. What exactly did they accomplish?
Varda successfully crystallized the HIV drug ritonavir in low Earth orbit and returned it to Earth. This isn't just a lab experiment. It's a proof of concept for commercial-scale in-space pharmaceutical manufacturing. In microgravity, without convection or sedimentation, you can form more perfect uniform crystals.
More perfect crystals? Why does that matter for a patient or a drug company?
It can dramatically improve a drug's properties, its stability, how well it dissolves, its bioavailability. This could lead to more effective formulations of existing drugs or enable new complex biologics that are difficult to produce on Earth. And it's not just Varda. We're seeing major players like Eli Lilly collaborating with Redwire to develop diabetes and cardiovascular therapies on the International Space Station.
So the technology is proven, but is there a real market?
The market just got a massive validation. On June 30th, the UK's Medicines and Healthcare Products Regulatory Agency, the MHRA, established the world's first dedicated regulatory pathway for space-manufactured medicines. This is a clear signal that they expect these products to be commercially available soon. They're building the bridge from orbit to the pharmacy.
Okay, so for a US or European pharmaceutical manufacturer, what does this mean today?
It's a dual-edged sword. It's an opportunity to reevaluate your drug pipeline for candidates that could benefit from microgravity formulation. It could revive a promising molecule that failed because of stability issues on Earth. The threat is that your competitor is already doing this and could launch a superior, space-manufactured version of a drug you already sell.
And for trading companies and distributors in the pharma supply chain,
they need to start thinking about a new category of ultra-high-value, low-volume therapeutics. The logistics will be different. You'll be dealing with downmass from specialized re-entry capsule providers, not standard air freight. This requires new partnerships and handling protocols.
So, what's the actionable insight for executives in this sector?
Task your R&D and business development teams to identify which high-value molecules in your portfolio are limited by their crystalline structure. Begin exploratory talks with in-space manufacturing platforms like Varda Space or Axiom Space. This is no longer a 20-year-out proposition. The groundwork for commercialization is being laid now.
From creating new products in orbit to cleaning up the mess we've already made, there was a significant pan-European deal announced that points to a new service industry in space.
That's right. On June 26th, German launch provider Isar Aerospace signed a contract to launch a mission for the Japanese company Astroscale. That mission is the UK's first commercial active debris removal, or ADR, demonstration. You have German launch, Japanese robotics, and a UK mission focus. It's a microcosm of the global commercial space ecosystem.
Why should a manufacturing CEO in Michigan or a logistics manager in Rotterdam care about space junk?
Because the entire global economy runs on space infrastructure that is increasingly at risk. There are over 8,000 active satellites in orbit. They provide the GPS for your supply chain, the secure communications for your financial transactions, and the Earth observation data for agriculture and climate monitoring. The growing cloud of debris threatens to create a chain reaction of collisions, a Kessler syndrome, that could disable these critical services.
So this is fundamentally about risk management for terrestrial industries. How does this affect U.S. and European manufacturers specifically?
For specialized manufacturers, it's a major opportunity. This new on-orbit servicing market needs advanced robotics, sophisticated sensors, guidance software, and capture mechanisms. Astroscale's ELSA-M mission, which just passed its vibration tests, uses a magnetic capture system. European and U.S. firms with expertise in these areas have a new, high-growth market to supply.
And for trading companies, is there a business in debris removal?
Absolutely. This is the emergence of a new service economy. Companies will be trading launch capacity, on-orbit servicing contracts, and even satellite life extension services. Think of Northrop Grumman's Mission Extension Vehicle, which docks with aging satellites to provide new propulsion. This is a market for high-value B2B services, and distributors can play a role in packaging and selling these integrated solutions.
What's the bottom line for executives?
First, conduct a strategic review of your organization's dependency on space-based data and services. Second, if you are in a high-tech manufacturing sector, evaluate the business case for entering the on-orbit servicing supply chain. This is a foundational industry for a sustainable space economy, and it's being built by public-private partnerships right now.
Let's push further out, to the moon. It feels less like exploration and more like an industrial development zone lately. What's the big driver here?
The money. On June 30th, the U.S. Small Business Administration and NASA formalized the partnership that the industry is calling MUNFRA for Lunar Infrastructure Financing. The goal is to use the SBA's Investment Company Program to leverage $20 billion in NASA funding into over $100 billion in private capital. It's a clear signal that the U.S. government is acting as an anchor customer to de-risk private investment in building a lunar economy.
So the government is creating a market from scratch. Are we seeing private companies respond?
Immediately. The very next day, on July 1st, a startup called Lunar Forge unveiled its plan to build habitats and reactor shields on the moon. They're not planning to ship building materials. They're going to 3D print them on site using a process called laser sintering on the lunar regolith, the moon's soil. They're aiming for their first demonstration in 2027.
3D printing lunar bases? For a traditional U.S. or European heavy manufacturing or construction firm, is this a threat or an opportunity?
It's both. The opportunity is immense. This requires adapting terrestrial expertise in robotics, industrial automation, laser systems, and material science for the lunar environment. The threat is that if they don't engage, a new generation of space-native tech companies will capture this market entirely, developing technologies that could eventually disrupt terrestrial construction as well.
What does this mean for trading and logistics companies? This sounds like the ultimate supply chain problem.
It completely redefines the supply chain. This is the essence of in-situ resource utilization, or ISRU. You are no longer shipping a finished habitat from Earth. You are shipping the robotic factory, the power system, and the AI that will use local resources to build the habitat. The value shifts from moving mass to deploying autonomous, productive capital assets.
What's the actionable advice for an industrial executive watching this unfold?
They need to establish a dedicated space applications working group. This group should be tasked with monitoring NASA solicitations like the Lunar Enabling Infrastructure Accelerator and actively seeking partnerships with startups like Lunar Forge. The goal is to find a low-cost way to get their own technology heritage in a space environment.
Underpinning all of this, from orbital factories to moon bases, is a revolution in the core electronics. We saw a really important update from a U.S. defense agency, DARPA.
Yes, on June 26th, there was a progress report on DARPA's Space Power Conversion Electronics Program, or SPCE. They are developing power systems that are over 85% efficient and radiation tolerant. The key is their use of wide bandgap semiconductors, specifically gallium nitride, or GaN, and silicon carbide, SiC.
Okay, Troy. Translate wide bandgap semiconductors for the non-electrical engineers in our audience.
Think of it as a step change in performance. Compared to traditional silicon, GaN and SiC chips can handle much higher voltages and temperatures, and they switch on and off much faster. This means power systems can be dramatically smaller, lighter, and efficient, all while being naturally more resistant to space radiation.
So how does this specifically affect a European electronics manufacturer or a U.S. tech company?
This is a critical development. It's an opportunity to enter the high-margin market for space-qualified, radiation-hardened components. BAE Systems just validated their new 45-nanometer rad-hard processor, showing this is a major focus. The larger impact, however, is that this technology is a dual-use goldmine. The same GaN and SiCTech that powers a lunar rover is essential for next-generation electric vehicles, 5G base stations, and hyper-efficient industrial power supplies on Earth.
And for technology distributors and trading companies?
They need to be aggressively building supply chains for GaN and SiC components. The demand curve is going to be incredibly steep, driven by both the new space economy and these massive terrestrial markets. Securing access to this technology from foundries and manufacturers like Microchip or Teledyne E2V will be a major competitive advantage.
What's the final actionable takeaway on this?
For any executive in the electronics, automotive, or industrial power sectors, the message is clear. Invest in gallium nitride and silicon carbide expertise immediately. Don't view this as a niche space technology. This is the future of high-efficiency power electronics, and the space industry is simply the leading edge of a wave that is about to break across the entire industrial landscape.
Troy, an incredible amount of development in 1 week. Let's wrap this up with your three key strategic takeaways for our listeners.
First, the Orbital Factory is now open for business. In-space manufacturing, particularly for pharmaceuticals, advanced materials, and semiconductors, is shifting from R&D to commercial reality. This is being accelerated by governments like the UK, creating the regulatory paths to market.
Second,
infrastructure is the new frontier. The primary economic activity is shifting from simply getting to orbit to building sustainable infrastructure in orbit and on the moon. This includes new service industries like debris removal and foundational technologies like lunar construction. The Moon for Initiative is a catalyst that private industry cannot ignore.
And your third point?
Enabling technology is a dual-use gold mine. The high-performance, hardened components being developed for space, especially in power electronics and computing, will inevitably flow back to disrupt terrestrial markets. Companies that get involved in the space supply chain will have a first-mover advantage on Earth.
So, what should executives be doing next week?
First, map your company's core competencies to this emerging industrial supply chain in space. Second, actively explore partnerships with space-native companies to de-risk market entry and gain technical expertise. And third, assign a team to monitor government solicitations from NASA, ESA, and defense agencies. They are creating the market, and right now, they are paying for the innovation.
Excellent advice. That's our briefing for this week. The industrialization of space is happening far faster than most terrestrial business plans currently account for.
The key is to see it not as a remote, separate industry, but as a high-performance extension of our own. The opportunities are there for those who look up.
Exactly. For Troy Technical Intelligence, I'm Susie. Join us next week for your strategic briefing, and be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.